Hi, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown, a double main event.
It's exciting.
Two shows, one episode. We had WrestleMania week, which was just, it kicked my arse. It's well and truly to the point where on Wednesday when I went to Full Sail to see the NXT tapings, I was like, and this takes a lot for me to ever say this. I was like, I'm done with wrestling for a little while. I need a few days off.
It is rare that you take time off of wrestling. Like, I can recall one or two other times where you were like, I just want to get away from it for like 2 days. And then you come back to it and it's fine.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I did have to organize the Chris Jericho tour, which was my sort of like my work part. But like, I have not watched any of WrestleMania or the post-WrestleMania Raws or SmackDowns or TakeOver. I don't want to watch any of them right now. I don't care. And it's like, because it's like that thing of like, you know, when we did, and thank you to everybody for all the feedback on the WrestleMania Rundown podcast. People have said it was great that we did the sort of the Undertaker thing justice. And I think it was the right three hosts to do it because we all came at it from different places. So like, I think it was interesting to listen to. But like, when I go back and watch that, I don't really want to watch it kind of being like, oh God, you know, about
no,
watching
you want to watch
again.
It with a mindset of like, no, I really want to watch this. I really want to feel JR calling this. I haven't watched any of WrestleMania or Raw or SmackDown back either. I did get home immediately and watch some Chikara because of course I did. But I also then decided to just watch all of Grace and Frankie because I wanted to watch something that wasn't wrestling.
Oh, I need to watch that soon.
It's so good.
By the way, in case you hear a slight clink of ice, I'm having a drink on the podcast. Will the world be okay?
And in case you hear me cough, I am sick right now because I got sick on the way home from Orlando and I've had to work for 3 days while coughing up all sorts of glorious things. So
that sucks.
It's been real fun. And that's why I sound like a sex pest right now. I have not taken up smoking in the past 4 days.
Welcome to the Sandra Sex Hotline.
Right.
Which is funny. So Sandra and I, quick story, I think people appreciate. So we're in the WrestleMania Superstore, and we're looking around, and this is really as a superstore. Like, there's everything that you could want, from a Slammy Award to more expensive items I purchased.
I was going to say, there were some other things there.
To T-shirts and the whole nine yards, as Jim Cornette would say.
Have you divulged what you bought at the superstore? Or is that like a secret?
No. I've not divulged it yet. I'm going to wait till I get home and see it and make sure I like it, and then I'll divulge it.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's going on eBay. But it's not like the drunk Monday Night Raw chair that I purchased years ago.
No.
It's not like that. But we're in the superstore, and I'm kind of like, oh, you know, well, I buy a t-shirt. I think I only bought like a WrestleMania vest in the end. I don't think I bought a t-shirt. But anyway, and so...
You bought the Eric Rowan mask.
I did, but I didn't buy a t-shirt.
No.
So I just bought the Eric Rowan mask. I bought the other thing, which I'll not talk about right now, and then I bought a WrestleMania vest. And I think that was in a program, you know, usual. And anyway, so I bought all that stuff, and then I was watching Sandra. And I'm watching Sandra sort of like look at different t-shirts and how she's feeling about them and blah, 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 blah.
And most of them are too big.
And most of them are too big. But you kept having this weird look on your face whenever you looked at t-shirts. And I was like, what is she doing? So I went over and I was like, what are you doing? And Sandra was like, what you don't understand, Kenny, is that I need to wear a t-shirt that is not going to invite people to grab me.
No, it's true.
And I was like, oh, right, okay.
Well, like the Diamond Dallas Page one, right? Like, it has the hands doing the diamond cutter thing, which is all well and good, except for those handprints are right over the tits. If I were to wear that shirt.
It is right over the tits.
And the Ty Dillinger one with the handprints, like, the handprints would be on the stomach, but you still don't really want to invite hands to be grabbing your stomach in such an area. And that's the problem with most of the Bayley merchandise, is that it says, I'm a hugger, or, you know, hug me, or whatever.
Peter Fails Dream. Essentially.
Yeah. Which is why I like the sweatshirt that I got, because the hood covers Hugger's Gonna Hug, and it just says Bailey on it and has the little, like, Bailey hugging symbol thing, but it doesn't say, like, hey, everyone in the world, hey, creepy men who could be my father, and I'm so glad you aren't, try and hug me, because that's a great idea.
So that was one of our Superstore experiences. Also, Chris Jericho is coming to Ireland.
Yay.
And we're bringing him over, which is cool. We do have big plans for a UK shindig with Y2J, but for now, we are taking him to Ireland and we are just basically plumping him down on a stage and going, here's a live talk as Jericho. So it's very nice for me because I don't really need to do much. I just need to ensure he gets there, put him on a stage, and then just let him go. Obviously, the UK shows will be different because, or not the UK, the rest of the UK shows. I know Belfast is in the UK. Calm down. But the Belfast and Dublin gigs will be purely talk as Jericho, and then the London, Manchester, Glasgow shows that we're going to do in early 2018 will be more the Inside the Rope shows that you know and love, of me interviewing him and different things going on. But if you are interested in seeing him in Belfast or Dublin, you can go to ticketmaster.ie, just search Chris Jericho, he will be there as of 9 a.m. Monday morning, fingers crossed. And you can buy your tickets. Also, you can get tickets for Wade Barrett or Alberto El Patron or Goldberg in the UK, insidetheropes.co.uk. Tickets are going fast, so please do pick them up. Also, Jim Cornette has a great Jim Cornette Experience podcast out where he talks about his whole WrestleMania week experience, including telling the story of me almost getting arrested for pissing in a bush.
So I'm going to need to download that.
So feel free to listen to that and listen to me being called out upon my midstream piss. Listen, I did admit under a moment of weakness that I would move to the United States because of Cracker Barrel and Waffle House. My stomach has told me that that's
Waffle
not the
House too? I mean, I understand why you liked Cracker Barrel, but Waffle House?
Here's the thing, Sandra. You can get anything with a waffle on the side.
That's true.
That's great. Why would you not want that? Oh, I'll have a burger and a waffle.
Stomach doesn't handle waffles very well, so I guess I'm the wrong one to ask. And I don't even like maple syrup. Like, I put jelly on waffles or, like, jam or whatever.
I love that you're correcting yourself to the British lingo.
Well, no, because jelly and jam are kind of different. And what I put on the waffle is most often jam.
Okay. That's cool. Well, listen, but you can still have a waffle and jam in Waffle House.
I could.
Don't get me wrong. Every Waffle House that I saw, which in the southern United States is every 3.2 miles,
mm-hmm.
Looks like drug exchanges are being made at them. But, you know, to each their own. I did have a couple of observations for you, though, because I decided after the whole hoopla of WrestleMania week and the Jim Cornette documentary before it that I wanted to take a few days off and go to Disney in Orlando. And so I've been here at Disney for a couple of days, and there's a couple of things I've noticed about Americans, Sandra, or Americans in Disney.
Oh, great. This is my favorite thing, is when Kenny tells me how Americans are. That was one of my favorite things at IHOP was our friend Kyle and I were sitting there with a bunch of Scots and, like, you know, a couple English people. And they were all just telling Kyle and me how Americans are and what Americans do. This is one of my favorite things. So go on.
So, before I was so rudely interrupted by an American.
Of course. That's a thing Americans do, Kenny. We interrupt.
They do. There's a load of people on motorized scooters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I automatically think, oh my god, like these people, like they've been paralyzed or they've been like some really traumatic thing has happened to them. They can't walk. So I'm like really sympathetic towards all these people. Only every single fucking one of them can walk. None of them need a fucking scooter. So I'm sitting on a fucking bus trying to get to the Magic Kingdom, right? And I've got to watch this fucking ramp be pulled out for this fat fuck who just can't be bothered walking on a fucking bus. Fuck off. My mother, right, has arthritis in her knees. Big Fiona Mac, arthritis in her knees, and she is a trooper. And we went to London, and she walked around London with me, and we went to see shows, and and she had a blister on her foot, and did she complain? Well, yes, she did complain. But did
but
you see her on a fucking motor? You heard a fucking motorized scooter? Fuck off. You can only get a motorized scooter if you can't fucking walk. These stupid, stupid people. And we allow it. We go, oh, you can't be bothered walking 3 miles? Get a scooter. Fuck off.
America.
What was the other thing? No, that was the main one.
I'm just kind of bummed that I didn't stay one day longer, not just because of the NXT tapings, but my brother and sister-in-law were actually in Florida the same week that we were.
Oh, wow.
And, like, I have a cousin who lives in Orlando who I didn't see because I was, like, tired and had tons of shit to do and just didn't see her. And apparently, like, the day that I flew home, I saw pictures on Facebook of my brother, my sister-in-law, and my nephew with my cousin and her boyfriend at Magic Kingdom, like, walking around Disney, which I could have done for free. So I'm just like, oh, if I would have stayed one day longer, I could have hung out with the family, which I enjoy doing, and that would have been really cool, but also I did have to get back and work.
That does happen. That does happen. But Disney's been nice. I went on...
Did you go on any rides?
Went on Splash Mountain. Big fan of that. Saw a Lion King show that was like a 30-minute circus thing, which was great. And then there was a Finding Nemo one, which I just couldn't get into because it's like people holding puppet versions of them.
Oh.
And I just couldn't get past it. It was too freaky. I can't go on upside down roller coasters. They just freaked me out. So I was going to go on an Everest one, and then I like Googled it, and it was like, there's a loop. So I was like, I can't do that one. So I didn't do that.
I was wondering if you were going to try and go on one.
I was going to try, and then I read that the loop, like somebody had like a bad neck because of it, and I was like, I just can't afford to be out of commission. So I just was like, I'll leave it. I was going to go on a railroad thing today, but I didn't get a chance to. I did go in the Haunted Mansion. Tomorrow I'm going in the Tower of Terror, which is at the Hollywood Studios, which is just mad drops in a lift.
I love the Tower of Terror. I like to sit in the middle seat where it's just the seatbelt. It doesn't have the, like, the over-the-shoulder guard things. So I have the last time I was at Disney was in 2000, so it's been a long time. But there's a picture of me in the Tower of Terror. I actually bought, like, that chintzy picture that they take because I was in the middle seat, and I was like, yes, I only have a seatbelt.
Oh, so you actually are sitting down in the Tower of Terror?
Yeah.
Okay, that's bad. I was imagining just standing there like, where can I grab as we drop to
No, 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 because then you would fly out of your seat, probably. Like, because it drops real fast.
Okay. Cool. So I'm doing that tomorrow. Where else did we go? We've been to Animal Kingdom, went to Epcot. It feels like we've been here for ages. So we've done a couple of shows here and there. It's been fun. I've enjoyed it. It's been nice to get away. But back on Tuesday. So and it's funny, today, for the first time, I was like, oh, the Superstar Shake-Up was tomorrow night. I could be into that.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm starting, my mojo's coming back, you know?
Mojo I finally.
I'll hang up this phone right now.
You said it, not me.
So, I'm quite intrigued for Raw tomorrow. So that should be good. And see where all the people end up. And obviously it's Raw and SmackDown now that have the Superstar Shake-Up.
It's yeah, two-night it's over event. 2 days, so I'm curious to see how that's going to go.
Yeah, I'm going to be flying while the SmackDown thing comes on. And if Korea don't bomb me on the way home, then I'll get to see it. Genuinely terrified about flying home. But anyway, that's, you know, the world's going to shit. Who cares?
Yeah, pretty much.
Retro Raw. So we've got episodes 203 and 204 to talk about. The fallout from WrestleMania 13 did happen last week or 2 weeks ago. So we're going through the two episodes. So let's just kick off. Episode 203, March 31st, 1997. But before we do, Sandra, a couple of notes I thought you might like to know.
Sure.
The preliminary reports came in for WrestleMania, and it did a 0.77 buy rate, which was down from WrestleMania 12, which did a 1.2. So the WrestleMania 13 buy rate was a disaster.
Oh, so it was real bad?
Really low number.
Is that because the main event seemed like not a main event?
Combination, WCW had a pay-per-view that month, there seemed to be pay-per-views going on all the time, and it just...
It WCW... started with the Godwins?
Yes. That was also a problem. Also, the original plan for the In Your House on the 20th of April was going to be Undertaker versus Vader in the main event, but that was changed because Vader had a deep knee bruise from his Final Four match, so he needed to rest up right after WrestleMania, so they didn't think he'd be back
in time. All these In Your Houses keep getting changed because of Vader situations.
Also, Sid was supposed to be in a match with Bret Hart, which we will see has changed. What else have we got to talk about? There was something else. There was an idea for Jim Cornette to return to managing and manage a heel Doug Furness and Phil LaFon.
Really?
Which doesn't happen, but it was one of the things bandied around. And Bret Hart, in his Calgary Sun column, was trying to apologize for what he'd done in the March 24th episode and try to get over that he is still a babyface in Canada and it's just American wrestling fans he has a problem with. The other thing that's interesting is that apparently the week of WrestleMania, or the week before WrestleMania, Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard both met up with Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect. And apparently what happened was Kurt Hennig pulled out the letter, unbeknownst to Bruce Pritchard, the letter that Bruce Pritchard had written to Lloyds of London, sort of like telling on him.
Shit.
Which cost him his $350,000 lump sum disability that he was due to get. And that was basically the beginning of the end, and that's what led to Hennig going to WCW.
Mm.
So, just some notes.
Cool.
Going into this. So, we kick off the show with the British Bulldog Owen Hart match for the European title. These guys, I mean, they could just wrestle every night and it'd be good.
Yeah, they're really good. They're really, really good. Mr. Sandra came in the room when this match was on, and he was like, I know that this is before this, but it looks like Bulldog's tights are modeled after Red Bull cans. So now whenever I see Bulldog's tights, all I can think of is Red Bull gives you wings. And they do look kind of similar, though, right?
No, they do. They do. I would never put the two and two together.
So but I feel like maybe Red Bull were fans of the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith.
I like to think so. I like to think that's how it all started. Is a guy like the Bulldog, and that got us Red Bull.
Mm-hmm.
So the match is going, and it's been going for a while. It's getting good, and then there's a ref bump, and then
And also at one point, Owen just kicks Bulldog right in the dick, like right in front of the referee. Is this no DQ?
No,
because they didn't say it was no DQ, but Hebner's looking right at them.
Well, you know, sometimes in WWF, the referees just don't do what they're supposed to do.
No, and then they get bumped, and then they just take a nap forever, and the match never actually has a conclusion.
No, because Hebner's bumped, and then Owen gets a chair, and then Bulldog just, like, clotheslines him into the chair.
Mm.
But, like, Owen kind of flies down on top of it. I mean, it still works, because they're both very good. But it made me laugh. And then Bret Hart comes out, and he basically puts the chair on Bulldog's neck to hold him down.
Yeah, he, like, attacks Bulldog, like he's joining Owen Hart or something, and they've been at odds for ages. And I was like, what even is happening? Meanwhile, Earl Hebner just naps. He is just out for the rest of this time. Like, he is out of commission completely.
He is, and then Bret's trying to hold Owen and Bulldog back, and then he gets in the mic, and he basically talks about how, you know, America is tearing them apart, and then Owen starts crying, and then
because Bret's like, I used to dress you for school and make sure you got to the bus and all this kind of stuff, and family values, and Americans don't understand family.
So cute.
And it cracks me up that Bret Hart is like, this is still well a match is happening theoretically, right? Like a match is happening. So it's one thing if a ref is bumped and, like, there are weapons used or the old green mist thing. Like, if someone's covered in mist and the ref wakes up and doesn't notice that there's been mist or something like that's kind of ridiculous. Apparently, Earl Hebner took a bump so hard that he's not even going to notice a full-on promo. Like, Bret gets on the microphone and is speaking. Like, Earl Hebner's probably going to notice that, right? Except for he doesn't.
Well, I think he just got up and was like, oh, they're just not going to wrestle anymore, and he's left.
I guess.
Because would Errol Hebner really get in and be like, guys,
well, I think he should ring the bell and be like, this is a no contest.
What would he say?
Just, everyone has stopped wrestling, we're done now? I don't know.
he's not the gym teacher.
It just seems like there should have been some conclusion. Like, it's all very cute when, well, I mean, there was the conclusion of Bret loving Owen and Owen's crying about, you know, their family and they both hug the Bulldog and Hebner's still not woken up, I guess. Like, I assume he's still out on the outside of the ring because he hasn't done anything about this. Like, because Bret Hart is trying to keep...
How do you care about Errol Hebner during the emotional roller coaster that is Bret Hart after 4 long years of being at odds with his brother? they finally reconnect, Sandra. They find Owen's crying, Bulldog is torn, and then they all get together and they all hug. This was poetry.
It was, and it was very beautiful. But the match is still going on, and I just feel like there needed to be a conclusion. Because the rules, Kenny. I wanted to know who won or lost or didn't win or didn't lose this match.
It was a non-finish, very clearly.
No, it was not very clear. There was no bell. I like when a bell rings. I need closure. I need closure in these situations.
Like, sometimes, like, you can't get... Listen, you're somebody who enjoyed this year's WrestleMania... maggots being part of the match.
I love when maggots are a part of the match. I have no problem with maggots. You know why? Because it was within the context of the match, and at the end of the match, when it was like, you know, flattest finish of all time, and I apologize if you can hear my cough drop that I'm chewing right now. But at least there was a conclusion to the match, so I knew when the match was over. I just felt like there was a dangling thread. Like, I wanted the match to be over and then for them to ring the bell, but then to also have their family moment and hug.
I love the idea that Brett would be mid promo and all you see is ding, 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 ding. This match has been ruled a no contest. And
wouldn't that be great, though? Because Brett would be like, no! See the American ringing this. Is Earl Hebner American?
Yes.
See? He would be like, that American ringing the bell trying to interrupt our moment as I'm trying to bring our family together. See how terrible the Americans are interrupting our moment? It would have been fodder, Kenny. It could have been even more beautiful.
Bell ringing aside, talk about your thoughts on Bret Hart being able to salvage his family and bring them back together.
It seemed very sudden. And it seemed like Owen was more than willing to reconcile when he's been saying terrible things about Bret Hart for a long time. And Jerry the King Lawler just doesn't know what to do with this situation.
He's weeping.
Because he doesn't want to like Bret Hart, but Owen is like his favorite, so he doesn't know what to do at all. But he doesn't want to, you know, acknowledge that the Hart family can be together because, you know, he hates Stu and Helen and he hates everything about the Hart family. So Jerry Lawler, I think, just like spontaneously combusts or something, which would be fine with me, actually. But
I thought it was a great segment. It was so good.
I thought it was really good. I think the problem is that, like, it's really nice that their family is getting together and I'm supposed to see this as a heelish move. Like, you're not supposed to see this as a heelish move. I'm supposed to see this as a heelish move. I can't see this as a heelish move. Because it's like,
oh, yeah,
no.
Yeah, because you're American, I'm British, yeah, I got it.
Right, yeah. But I guess maybe this isn't going to connect with me the way it should. Because...
because you like Bret Hart, you hate Shawn Michaels.
Yes, and also, I hate nationalism storylines. I hate them so much. So... like, I think, I heard you chant USA at WrestleMania. I didn't chant USA at WrestleMania.
I get caught up in stuff.
I know. I'm just saying, that's the type of wrestling fan.
Listen,
I am.
If me shouting USA is going to get me some fucking pyro, I'll chant fucking anything you want. Apart from Mojo is good. It's the one thing I won't chant. So we get that, then it leads into El Mosco versus Supernova. Who gives a flying fuck?
The only thing I have to say about this, Mr. Sandra was like, they don't really get the best luchadors, do they? They keep getting that they keep going to that Sin Cara well and getting defective ones, except for Rey Mysterio.
The most exciting thing we get on here is that Sonny's on commentary. She's terrible.
Vince McMahon at one point says, "Sonny, no doubt, is fluent in any language." No, she isn't. Vince McMahon further proving he does not know how language works. Like, remember when he said, "In any language, it's spelled excitement." No, that is not the case.
That's just factually incorrect.
It's just not true, Vince McMahon.
But in the end, Moscow gets the pin.
Nobody cares.
In a crap match. Jim Ross interviews the Legion of Doom. They challenge Bulldog and Owen for In Your House. Nice to see LOD getting a little bit of promo time and sort of having a focus of where they want to go.
I like to put all of the Legion of Doom promos together and think that they're, like, creating this world, right? So when Hawk says, "I and Animal are gonna personally knock the doggy dumplings out of the bulldog," that was
a
line.
I mean, that's... if that's not gonna make you buy a ticket, I don't know what is.
I just want to know what the toe-biting rats will do with that. Because remember how Legion of Doom is all about rats biting toes?
Do you know what's funny is, like, Legion of Doom are one of my favourite tag teams, and they're so iconic and all that. And I feel like by the end of this run, you're gonna just have like a pamphlet full of LOD-isms.
I'm going to have this whole world created for Legion of Doom that no one else has cared to create, but I'm going to put it all together.
And you're probably going to fall in love with them because of the world that you've created.
Probably, yeah. That makes absolute sense.
But yeah, no, I think LOD versus Bulldog and Owen is a fun match, and I think it's the natural place to go. You know, LOD got the victory at WrestleMania with Ahmed against The Nation. I don't think
there's
any
other
team.
It's the natural place to go. Why is it the natural place to go? Like, they are just a team getting a match. It's no different than Mankind Invader.
No. Here's why. Mankind Invader beat fuck all to get their match against Bulldog and Owen. Who did they beat? LOD came back. They were in a semi-headline position at WrestleMania. They won the match against The Nation, who nobody else could take down. And now they want a shot at the tag team titles. They've been champions before. There's more reason for them to get a title shot than fucking Mankind Invader.
Yeah, I guess so.
Who would you rather? The Godwins?
No. Goodness, no. They never win. Furnace and LaFon already got their chance. Although they did beat Owen and Bulldog like loads. But
just fell asleep midway through saying their name. But, I mean, the LOD are probably the best bet. But then we got...
Probably, because the tag division is quite crap. Sisters of Love, where are the Sisters of Love? Bring them in.
Yeah, because that will fucking help. your favorite country singer and
Jesse
mine.
Jammies. It's with two M's again.
The real Jesse Jammies is here.
With a child. Who is this child? Why is there a child?
I don't know. I really don't know.
At this point, I tried to sing along to the song, and because I'm sick, it came out really, really warbly, and I was like, I sound real stupid. I didn't realize how bad my voice was yesterday when I was watching it. I was like, oh yeah, this sounds bad.
I can't sing
on a good day.
I can only imagine. Desi Jammies was victorious over Jerry Fox very quickly, and then the Honky Tonk Man got in the ring. Now, just for clarification, the Honky Tonk Man on the previous weekend's Shotgun Saturday night had offered the Blackjacks, that's right, the Blackjacks, the chance to be his new protege.
So he's actually offering chances to be protege now. Like, he's actually putting himself out there and getting rejected repeatedly, is the Honky Tonk Man's new thing.
So it's taken him 6 months to pick the shittest people on the roster.
Right.
So that would be like me. That would be like if I'd went to WWE in November and been like, I need someone who can Rowd and Rod, like Rowdy Roddy Piper did before, and I need to find someone who can do it. And then I came out the Raw this week and was like, Titus, you're my guy.
Pretty much. I mean, although, to be fair, isn't Jesse Jammies exactly what the Honky Tonk Man is looking for? I think I said that on a previous episode. Like, because at least he does sing and he does dance. I mean, I don't know if he quite shakes, rattles, and or rolls. And we haven't heard him play the guitar. But, I mean, he has a bunch of the qualifications. He sings better than the Honky Tonk Man does.
That's true. Well, I think Jesse Jammies is one of the best that he could get for what he's looking for. But Honky Tonk Man had previously offered the Blackjacks on Shotgun. They just killed him and did not want to do it. And Jesse James here acts as if he's about to play the guitar, which was Honky Tonk Man's... Now, I don't know if you caught this on commentary.
What, the heirloom?
A family heirloom.
Oh, yes.
That was supposed to be a comedic take on family heirloom.
Because hair and the Honky Tonk Man. It's hilarious.
Is it wrong that I laughed when it happened?
I laughed too. And then wrote down a heirloom.
I also love the Honky Tonk Man is just determined to not wear the belt that would make his outfit look less fat.
Was he not wearing the belt? I thought he was wearing the belt.
No, he was not wearing the belt.
Was he wearing the belt in the next one, maybe?
Yes, I think he was.
It's all blending together. I've taken a lot of cough medicine.
Jesse James acts as if he's about to play the guitar, and then he just smashes it up and says it's not really my tune, and then walks off, and we hear his theme tune again, and Honky Tonk Man just looks disheveled.
See, and I didn't know about the Blackjack situation. When Jesse Jammies...
Does that change things?
Yes, it does. Because at this point, as I was watching, I thought, you know, like, the Honky Tonk Man is offering the guitar to Jesse Jammies, thinking, you know, you are finally the one that I've been looking for, you know, because you sing and you dance and this is, you know, it makes perfect sense. And Jesse Jammies just smashes the guitar because baby faces. Because Jesse Jammies is a baby face, right? Like, that's why he came out with a child and he's been singing and he's been trying to be a baby face this whole time. Which is why I was very, very confused when the Billy Gunn situation happens in the next episode. We'll get to that. But the whole, like, I thought he was just, like, saying no to the Honky Tonk Man because he was like, no, I am a noble baby face who's gonna smash your heirloom and crush your dreams and say no to you in the most violent fashion possible. So, yay, I'm a good guy.
Wrestling. We follow this up with a really nondescript squash match where the Nation of Domination beats some jobbers. Leads us into hour two.
Oh, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, she's drop-dead gorgeous, and tonight she learns that love is not an option. Don't miss Rita Wilson as La Femme Nikita.
Oh, God. Paul Bearer comes out, basically...
Can I just say my favorite thing about the intro to Hour 2? Vince McMahon on commentary. Explosion. Contusion. Concussion. That's what he says to intro Hour 2.
I thought it was going somewhere.
Of Raw as well. Just explosion, contusion, concussion. He just came up with some shun words and just said them in a row.
I love the idea that 20 years ago, Vince McMahon ended a sell point by saying... concussion.
Right?
Like, that's one of the selling points of Raw.
Talk to Daniel Bryan in 20 years, Vince.
We get Paul Bearer. He begs the Undertaker to take him back. Undertaker, like, teases that he might take him back because, obviously, like, Paul Bearer had helped him for so many years. But then he just starts beating up Paul Bearer.
Yeah, he does.
Which, you know, of course he should because Paul Bearer turned on him.
He did.
An evil, evil man hit him with the urn over the head and then brought Mankind in. And
I mean, to be fair, Paul Bearer said, I did this all for you, Undertaker, because he said that he held the Undertaker back and da-da-da. Oh, no, he's totally lying here, obviously. But he says that he did it all for the Undertaker because, like, when he set the Undertaker free or when he left the Undertaker or whatever, like, it was all for the Undertaker's own good because, look, he became the WWF champion and all of that. And the Undertaker... I guess, did not buy Paul Bearer's pitch here.
He did not. And then Mankind attacks the Undertaker with a fireball to the face.
Right in his face, fire.
Which provokes the return of Psycho Sid.
Yes!
Who chases Mankind through the crowd. What was your reaction to the segment overall of, you know, the build for Undertaker, Mankind with Bearer there, and then Sid's glorious return?
I felt kind of bad for Paul Bearer. For some reason, and I don't know why, because I really shouldn't, because he's a liar, but he was just like, I did this all for you, Undertaker, da 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 da, and I was like, I kind of love you, because you're my melting man, and you're cute. But then all of a sudden, Mankind from under the ring with a fireball, wait, what, there's fire? Ah, what is happening? And I'm like, this is crazy, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, there's Sid going after Mankind, and I have no idea why, and it's just all chaos, basically. And also, what didn't help, aside from... being on a lot of cough medicine, the tracking was bad on this for some reason, like, on the network, the actual, like, tracking, like, they took it from VHS, almost, like, the tracking was bad on the video, so it was jumping all around, and it was just super chaotic, and what I was really hoping is that we're gonna see the Undertaker, like, disfigured or something, like, his face is gonna be all melting off or something, because that could be amazing, and I can only imagine the makeup job that they would do, and I feel like I'm just gonna be really disappointed in whatever this is when we see the Undertaker.
But we did get Sid, who, for whatever reason, hadn't appeared since WrestleMania, but decided to run out in gear to chase Mankind.
For why? We don't know.
Who knows?
Because he's Sid, but he does react to what we just saw next. He reacts.
He says,
well, I'm going to tell you, Vince McMahon, this is a message to you, Mankind. So he's going to tell Vince McMahon, and this is a message to Mankind. If you want to play with fire, you're dealing with someone that knows exactly what to do with fire. See, your problem is you're messing with The Undertaker, and that was your mistake. Just like Bret Hart messed with Psycho Sid, and that was his mistake. Now I'm going to say something. At WrestleMania 13, at that night, yes, The Undertaker was a better man than me, but he will always be a better man than you. And you want to play with fire? Well, you will play with fire with the Undertaker, and you will burn in hell.
It's going to really make me sad when you don't get to do them anymore.
Aw. I'm really sad about it, too. I love the Sid promos. They're my favorites.
So Sid is as bonkers as usual, thank God.
It's not even making sense. Like, who is he even calling out here? I guess he's calling out Mankind, because he's supposed to face him next week.
I guess?
But, like... Yeah. Because I think the only logical thing that he says is like, yeah, Bret Hart was a better man than me at WrestleMania 13, but he will always be a better man than you. Or no, Undertaker was a better man than Sid. But it's all so confusing. There are just so many names. He's just talking. And he also says, at that night.
I love him.
He's so great.
We get a match with Triple H and Goldust with no valets. We don't get China or
We've never
Marley
seen Triple H versus Goldust before. Oh, wait.
China ends up on the ramp, but that ends up, obviously... Well,
even though she was barred from ringside, right? Like, China's barred from ringside, and this is the main thing about this match, is there's going
to be
no
fair,
China.
She's not at ringside.
Well, she's not at first, but she comes to ringside, and there seem to be no consequences to this. I mean, she kicks the shit out of Pat Patterson, which was oddly satisfying, but she kicks the shit out of Pat Patterson and has no consequences.
Why is her beating up an elderly man satisfying?
I don't really like Pat Patterson.
But, like, the thing that was cool about it, so she ends up coming out, and she, you know, Goldust is going to win the match with the curtain call. She runs in, causes the DQ, and then Hunter and China are beating on Goldust when Pat Patterson comes in to break it up, and then Patterson goes after Triple H. Mm. And I thought it was really effective use of a legendary guy who, like, he's had enough and he just starts wailing on Triple H, but ultimately they get the one up on him and they beat him up and they walk away. Hunter and China get their heat and Patterson was the Valley legend and Goldust got screwed in the match, and I thought it was a pretty good story.
No, it was a pretty good story, except for the fact that, like, she was supposed to be barred from ringside. But she just came out anyway. And it didn't seem to matter. But I like China. I like the presentation of China. China's really interesting. Did you notice that they under Triple H, it said H.H. Helmsley?
Yeah, I don't really know why they did that.
We're getting closer to him being actually Triple H. He's Double H. Helmsley now.
What about
like,
six
we're
months
so
away.
Close.
We're getting there. We're getting there. And then we get a promo from Stone Cold Steve Austin where he basically comes out. Vince talks to him, and he... This is, like, his first real babyface promo. You know, he talks about he never said, I quit.
Though? Is it a babyface promo?
I think so. I mean, you know, you can... The good thing about Steve Austin here is Steve Austin isn't just come out and become, you know, I love the fans.
Right.
But what he's doing is a babyface promo. He never said, I quit. He doesn't care if people boo him or cheat him. Well, that's valiant, because you're not pandering. You're not, you know...
That's valiant, but he's also saying he doesn't care about the fans.
Yeah, good. They don't want him to be like, I love you guys. They don't care. They want to see somebody beat the shit out of this Canadian cunt that's come out and said that America's shite.
Yeah.
It's simple. And then Brett comes on the Titantron, and Brett says he's going to make Austin look even worse than he did at WrestleMania 13. And they have a back and forth, and... Here's my issue. Now, obviously, next week's show, which we're covering in a minute, Steve Austin inserts himself into the match with Brett in your house. But it's never felt for me at any point like we were leading to Sid versus Brett. It always feels like Austin versus Brett. So I'm baffled by the idea that, you know, WrestleMania 13, a month before, we weren't even going to get Brett and Austin. And then a month before In Your House, we weren't going to get Bret and Austin again. It's very difficult to watch these back and see that that was not the plan, because it just feels so obviously like the way to go.
Well, and it's really weird because it doesn't seem like Sid and Bret have even really interacted all that much. I mean, Sid just cut that promo where we think he was calling out Bret Hart, but we're not super sure. And that's kind of the only interaction that they really have. I don't really remember what Bret Hart says about Psycho Sid, if he says anything about Psycho Sid here, because all I have written down is, you know, Austin or Bret answers from the Tron and they quarrel. But Like, Austin saying he's going to look at Brett's grave, and I'll say, here lies Brett the Hitman Hart, the biggest piece of crap. Like, the story seems to be Austin and Brett, and the only interaction Sid has had was chasing after Mankind.
Yeah, so it doesn't really add up for me. But I liked Austin here. I like his intensity. I like the idea that Steve Austin is just so incensed by Bret Hart and what he's done, and he doesn't want to leave him alone, and he desperately wants another piece of him. Like, I think that the Steve Austin Bret Hart stuff is still as compelling 20 years later as it was then.
Like, I think it's definitely compelling. I just don't buy the fact that this is a traditional, like, well, it's not a traditional babyface promo. I think we agree on that, but I don't even think this is a babyface promo. I think this is a Steve Austin promo.
Yeah, but I think by default, Steve Austin is a babyface because people are behind him. People are, like, people have signs for him. People feel a connection to him after him, you know, valiantly passing out at WrestleMania. And you know, you've got... So the guy that he is having a promo about is a guy who came out the week before, and although we don't see him this way, Figure Four ring posted a babyface that is injured and told America to go fuck themselves. And Steve Austin's now coming out to say he wants to fight that guy. So I think that by default, people think of him as a babyface, even if he's not. But what was so great about Steve Austin and his whole, even when we get to like a year from now, he never panders to the fans. He never, like, well, I mean, eventually he'll be like, you know, give me a hell yeah. But, like, he's never like, hey, guys, I'm going to do this one for you. You know, he's never like that, which is what makes Steve Austin so great.
Well, I mean, he does say, bottom line is, I ain't changing for nobody. You know, you put me in this ring when the bell goes off, you know, whether he's against a good guy and they boo the hell out of him, or whether he's against a bad guy and they cheer him. He's the 1996 King of the Ring. He's Stone Cold Steve Austin, blah, 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 blah. So it doesn't seem like he's going to change regardless. And I do like that about his character. It's just interesting because I always kind of figured, like, when the double turn happened, because everyone talks about the double turn at WrestleMania 13, it seems like it would illustrate really clear babyface and heel roles. Like, and this is a weird comparison, but, like, when Alberto Del Rio and Dolph Ziggler did their double turn, it was very clearly, like, Dolph Ziggler was a babyface now and Alberto Del Rio was a heel now. And this doesn't feel like that to me. This feels like their positions have shifted, but not swapped. Like, they're just on a different plane to everybody else.
But I think that's kind of the one of the reasons why 1997's storytelling is so much better, because you don't really need to have it all spoon-fed. You know, it's like you can kind of make up, like, the Del Rio and Ziggler thing is perfect illustration. It had to be spoon-fed.
Yeah.
It had to be like, here is your baby face. Here is your heel. You know, whereas this is like, it all feels organic. It all feels like, well, the guy that I want to get his ass kicked is the guy that is a dick. And then the guy that is trying to come across like he doesn't care is the guy that I kind of want to root for, because I buy into him and I buy into what he's trying to do.
Just watching this back makes that whole Bret Hart, Alberto Del Rio backstage segment seem even more ludicrous. Remember when Bret Hart was you remind me of a Mexican Bret Hart.
Oh, the worst thing ever. Here's a little bit of history. The only televised match in history, we would never get it again, Bret Hart and The Rock.
Really? Never
One time,
again?
We never get it again.
Wow. So this is as good as it got?
Well, because we get Bret Hart against Rocky Maivia, and like Rocky Maivia is just not what, like, because the whole thing about The Rock.
Bless him and his dancing punches, but he is shit.
Oh, he's terrible here. But part of the charm of The Rock when he became The Rock was that he actually had some confidence, and he was able to, you know, use that, and that was part of his shtick. Whereas here, he's not really got any confidence.
No.
And he is, you know, he's presented like Roman Reigns, but nobody buys it. And then you get Bret Hart, who's just beginning to do that storyline where he's like a heel some places and a babyface other places and all that sort of stuff, which is still really interesting to me that they were able to do that with him. But Bret gets a shot at the Intercontinental Championship here, which is weird that he's now getting a shot at the IC title. And they
actually
have
that written down. Like, it seems weird that he's going for the IC title when he is so focused and so obsessed, as Shawn Michaels will say in the next episode, like, so obsessed with the WWF title. But he just sort of randomly attacked Rocky Maivia last week, so he's going for the Intercontinental Championship. Because reasons, I guess.
Reasons. And the match is pretty decent. You can tell Brett's kind of carrying Rock.
Kind of.
He's carrying him to a match.
Hardcore carrying him. And, I mean, props to him. He can do it because the match is fine. But...
And then in the end, we obviously get the figure four ring post spot. And then Errol Hebner manages to ring the bell now. He's learned.
Yes, there's closure. Brett apparently didn't really want the Intercontinental Championship because he refuses to let go of the figure four around the ring post. And he knows the rules of wrestling. So apparently this belt was not very important to him and he just wants to hurt Americans? Is that his goal?
I think so. I think that's his goal, pretty much.
Because why would he want to hurt the American and also get the belt? And take the belt from the American. Be like, Intercontinental my ass. It should be won by someone from across the border. Like me, because I'm Canadian.
But in the end, we'd see Steve Austin coming out. Steve Austin, Brett would brawl. Then we have Owen Hart and the Bulldog coming out. Then we have LOD coming out. Big, big kind of brawl. Chaos to end the show. What did you think of this ending? And I guess this show as a whole to try and... really hammer home, okay, Bret Hart and the Hart Foundation are kind of cementing themselves over here, and then on the other side we've got Steve Austin, LOD, and the babyfaces kind of cementing their side of things.
Well, I mean, I kind of enjoyed this episode as a watch, but it seems very abrupt that Bret Hart was able to, in one promo, bring Owen and Bulldog back together, but also bring himself into that fold, and... just have them all become a family, because how long have Owen and Bulldog been fighting and having dissension and having problems with one another? And they finally turned and it seemed like we were finally going to get Bulldog as a babyface. No, never mind.
But you know what I liked about it is that it was almost like, oh, fuck you, Brett. We almost had Bulldog and you took him, you know?
Yeah, I guess I didn't really think of it that way. It just seemed sort of abrupt, like they all just got along again because Brett reminded Owen that he took him to the bus.
I think it's more that, you know, they needed a reason to reconnect and Brett became the reason.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that makes itself a little bit more clear in the next episode. I think at the end of this particular episode, I was just kind of like, okay, I guess that's what we're doing. I was pretty excited that we were going to get Brett versus Sid again. So never mind, yep. I guess.
So in terms of the March 31st episode, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. Where's your thumb?
I think thumbs up, because there was some good stuff on it. I mean, like, who could be bothered to care about the AAA match in the middle, and, like, some of the Legion of Doom stuff is just weird. But, I don't know, it was easy to watch, and it was enjoyable overall, I guess.
Before we get to the April 7th episode, I'm a thumbs up as well, I thought it was really good. I thought I'd give you a fun rumor that the National Enquirer picked up 20 years ago this week. The National Enquirer told us that Jennifer Aniston of Friends is dating professional wrestler Rey Mysterio.
What?
There's no truth to it whatsoever. Even Mysterio in his book was like, there was a rumor that I was dating Jennifer Aniston. This is not true. But this was one of the things that were going around, in this time period.
That's just bizarre. So Rey Mysterio was a big enough name, though, at that point that... he was rumored to be dating Jennifer Aniston, because Jennifer Aniston was a big deal.
Yep. Also, at this point in time, like early April, the idea was already in WCW's mind that they want to make Hogan Sting the main event of Starrcade, and they want to kind of make Starrcade their WrestleMania. So even late March, early April, it's already in the thought process.
When is Starrcade?
December.
Okay.
Last pay-per-view of the year. And also, at this point, they are expecting Yokozuna to return in the summer with tons of weight lost.
That does not happen.
Does not happen. But that's the plan. So, on to the April 7th episode of Monday Night Raw. We have Vince McMahon,
so
Jim Ross...
I didn't notice the rating for the March 31 episode. But this Raw number 204, April 7, 1997, is rated TVMA, mature audiences only. Because as it autoplayed on my Roku, it went to TVMA, you know, set your parental controls. There was this whole warning. It took like 30 seconds of my life away. And I thought that it had autoplayed to the wrong thing, because I was like, why is Retro Raw going to be TVMA? And at this point, what I was thinking was, ooh, is it because the Undertaker's face is all melted off and we're going to see really interesting stuff with that? Because the whole intro to this was like the fireball with Mankind and the Undertaker. And I thought we were going to get some gore, Kenny.
No.
No. I don't know what on this show was TVMA. As opposed to the week before.
I can say this. The Honky Tonk Man's outfit and commentary was for mature audiences, because otherwise, why would you ever put a child through that?
I don't know. I mean, there were children on this show, but...
Jim Ross, the Honky Tonk Man, and Vince McMahon... Fuck the children on the show. We will get to them. Vince, JR, and Honky Tonk Man in the booth. Jesus Christ.
Why is Honky Tonk Man there? Like, why does he have to be there the whole time?
Because we did something to deserve this for some reason. So we kick it off with a non-title match of Owen and the Bulldog against the Godwins. The Godwins have a guest manager. Do you have any thoughts on this?
No, because I don't even remember it.
Rebecca Jones.
Who?
I don't know.
I missed this entirely.
She is there. I didn't know who she was, so I had to Google it. And apparently her name's Rebecca Jones, and I still can't find any information about who she is. No idea.
That's quite random. Is she on La Femme Nikita?
God, I hope so. That'd make more sense, at least. So we got the Godwins versus Owen Hart and the Bulldog, and the match kind of goes about 8 minutes or so. Owen and Davey, obviously, in the end, get the win. But then afterwards, Owen and Davey are going to leave, and LOD are on the ramp. LOD then take their shoulder pads off, and they start making their way towards the ring. Owen and Davey try and retreat, but as they retreat, the Godwins are behind them. The Godwins try to slop Owen and Bulldog, but Owen and Bulldog, being very clever men, move out of the way, and LOD gets slopped.
Chaos and shenanigans.
And LOD just look at the slop on themselves and they're like, nah, fuck this, and start brawling with the Godwins.
Yeah, as Owen and Bulldog just sort of laugh from the ramp, like giving their commentary. I liked Owen's promo at the beginning of the match, like the crowd's chanting USA at them, and Owen's like, without Brett, you know, the Bulldog and I would still be feuding, and now their family is filled with love. So Owen did a good job of calling back to last week, I think, and then saying, Brett is the reason that our family is together, and he's putting it all in Bret Hart, and I think it highlighted the whole story a little bit better for me. And also, in the next segment, we see Owen and Bulldog backstage just sort of laughing at their handiwork. We see the slopping of the Legion of Doom. At one point I had written in my notes, we see the replay of the slopping 3 times, and then Owen and Bulldog are like, can we see that again? And we see it another time. So we see the replay of it 4 times, because Owen and Bulldog are just so excited that they're watching They're such arseholes, and I love them. They're like those two, you know, class clowns just in the back of the class snickering and causing trouble.
Yeah, they're great. They're so good.
I love that. They're like, in England and Canada, we don't do that kind of stuff. The slopping. They're like, dirty Americans.
Which is interesting, because by having that reference in there, you know, England and Canada, they're already trying to bring in, you know, England are supposed to cheer us. You know, it's not just Canada. America are supposed to hate us.
Because
everyone else loves us.
What I'm finding kind of interesting about this is that the Whole Heart Foundation, right? That's their name? What it's going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the Whole Heart Foundation is a babyface act in everywhere else but America. And Owen Hart, up until this point, has been a heel everywhere. Right?
Yep.
So it's not just Bret Hart that walks that line. It's their whole entire family, which makes it even more interesting and kind of makes me wonder how storytelling is going to go with that many people involved.
Yeah, that is true. But also, at the beginning, you had Bulldog come out with the British flag and Owen come out with the Canadian one. So the tie to Bulldog being British, I guess, is going to be part of the why people should still cheer Bulldog. Mm-hmm. And I guess by default, because Brett was always more popular in Europe anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's not much of a stretch to get people to cheer him. But it gets really interesting as we go along, seeing the reaction to them everywhere we go.
And weirdly, Stone Cold Steve Austin is being held back by security from, like, going after Owen and Bulldog, because apparently he still has issues with them, too. Stone Cold Steve Austin doesn't seem to have changed at all. Like, at all. I guess I didn't expect his character to change, but I expected there to be some nuanced changes, I guess, but he is still just trying to attack everybody.
Well, but now he... It's almost like... that before, you know, he had a problem with the Bulldog before, mm-hmm. and now it's almost like, see, I told you he was a dick.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's almost like Steve Austin's been vindicated that, you know, they are what he said they were all along, I guess, because they've now become these unlikable people who want to tell you that your country isn't good enough and all this sort of stuff. I mean, the thing I like about this is it's very layered, and it's not easy to follow. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to pay attention. I quite like that about it, because now everything's so spoon-fed that, it's a welcome change for me anyway, watching it back.
It's a great story with great layers. I really like it a lot.
And it gets so much better. So as Steve Austin's sort of being held back, he then comes out. Really good reaction from the crowd. Mm-hmm. They're really into him. He's going to go up against Billy Gunn. Pack the kids in the car. You want to go see this match? Austin ends up, you know, winning the match with ease, obviously.
Billy Gunn tries to dance at one point and looks like he's having convulsions while constipated.
It's pretty much how he dances, to be fair.
It's not good. I was very confused, though, by the end of this segment.
Well, so Steve Austin is victorious. And then the Honky Tonk Man comes in to console Billy Gunn, mm-hmm. and tell Billy Gunn, you know, there's no harm in losing, or no shame in losing to Steve Austin. And Honky Tonk Man offers his services.
He basically proposes to Billy Gunn.
And Billy Gunn, as he would usually do in gay storylines, is at the end, hit the guy and walk away. Because that's what he did with Billy and Chuck. Right. But, Billy Gunn ends up just, like, nailing him and then leaving. So, Honky Tonk Man is having no luck. Honky Tonk Man is having no luck whatsoever. Nobody wants to be one of his protege. Nobody wants to be his protege.
Nobody wants to be his protege. The problem is that I know who his protege ends up being.
Don't talk about it, Sandra.
Confused. If we're going in non-spoiler land, I'm fused.
No, because... just tell people.
He's not rockabilly yet, so how the fuck does he become rockabilly when the Honky Tonk Man just proposed to him and he kicked him?
It's Billy Gunn. Billy Gunn can't be his protege.
So what, does he go into like a Steve Urkel-type metamorphosis chamber and become rockabilly then? Is rockabilly the Stefan Urkel to Billy Gunn's Billy Gunn?
I don't know what any of that means.
Okay, you know how in Family Matters, did you watch Family Matters ever?
No.
Okay. For anyone who watched Family Matters, so Steve Urkel is this nerd, right? And then he built this, like, thing, and he could go into it, and he would become really, really cool. And he was Stefan Urkel when he came out of the, like, thing that made him cool. And then he was a completely different person. But it was only because he, like, transformed. And so that's what I'm picturing happening here. I'm making 90s references and you don't understand them and I'm so sad. But...
I feel bad that I don't get it. I should be getting it.
You should be. This was a TGIF staple.
I'm sorry.
But I'm just basically really confused as to how we're going to get to rockabilly if Billy Gunn just rejected the Honky Tonk Man.
Allow it to happen.
How long is it going to take? Because the longer it takes, the more Honky Tonk Man has to be on my television.
I mean, rockabilly debuts at the next pay-per-view.
Oh, thank fuck.
Two more Raws, now he's here. Okay. Now, here, I just want to
clarify. Also,
at
this point, I was confused because I thought Jesse Jammies just kicked the Honky Tonk Man because he was a babyface and the Honky Tonk Man was evil, and I don't understand why the heels are also rejecting the Honky Tonk Man.
Because Honky Tonk Man is shite?
I mean, that's a fair point.
It is a fair point. So, it has been a long day and I'm very tired. So, I am... initially, before I'd watched the show, I had read the results about the Rebecca Jones thing, and I remember the Godwins coming out with a weird woman, but it's not on the network version. I've just watched it back while we've been talking, so I'm very confused as to why I remember this woman, and I can't find it anywhere. I can't find it on the network version, but I remember them coming out with a weird woman, and I remember, and I read the result of it like earlier on. So I don't know who this Rebecca Jones is. So if somebody out there who has more free time than I do, please, can you find this Rebecca Jones?
Did they edit Rebecca Jones out of history for some reason?
Well, I've looked back here, and like it just goes from Bulldog and Owen in the ring to like an ad break back, and then you just see the Godwins, and like it doesn't pull out from the ring much. So like I'm guessing that she must have just like came out with them and then she left or something.
I wonder if they don't have rights to show her or something. Who is this woman? Now I'm intrigued.
The Rebecca Jones mystery continues. But yeah, I wish I could offer you some sort of insight or analysis as to why the Honky Tonk Man is A, offering his services, which
no one wants.
B, why he's offering to all these different people who are turning him down, and C, why one of the people that he turns that turns him down then magically morphs into another character and becomes his guy.
This is bad.
But it's all okay, Sandra. Because when this has happened and you're a bit unsure about life, what you need is Doc Hendricks and children.
Jamie and Katie
to sell you an Undertaker door banner.
Because that's what you need. You need this huge Undertaker thing where his eyes are all white out, like creepy and everything. I mean,
I'm not being funny though.
My feelings about the Undertaker side, do you want that staring at you in the night?
$29.95 is not a bad price.
Well, I guess not, but...
But then you're not... You're like the least collectory collector person in the world, so you don't get collecting.
No, because I already have too much shit in my house.
That's not my fault.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, like, this is not a banner that I would want to purchase, but...
If I seek this banner out from, like... somewhere and paid hundreds of dollars for it and got it for you as a gift, would you keep it?
Yeah, it would probably go in the closet somewhere.
You were meant to say you'd put it up in the
There
house.
Is no room. I'm looking at my walls. They are full of things. There
you put it on a door. Room. It's a door banner.
The
not
doors
a wall.
Are full of things too. I have hangers on the doors. Clothes hang from the doors.
Even like the bathroom door?
Yeah.
Both sides?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a mirror on one side and clothes on the other one.
Do you really need a mirror?
Yes, because then if I am doing my hair, then I can open the bathroom door at an angle and see the back of my head. It's very important.
$29.95. Jamie and Katie are modeling t-shirts. Now, poor Katie. I don't want to be facetious about Katie, right? but she's modeling like a double XL t-shirt, and you're like, come on. Like, it's hard enough being a kid in America without being a double XL girl in an ad with Doc Hendricks selling an Undertaker banner.
Well, what baffles me is, who are these random children, first of all? Like, Doc Hendricks is just like, my friends, Jamie and Katie. Like, I don't think they should be hanging out with Doc Hendricks. And
what are you trying to imply about Doc Hendricks?
I'm not implying anything. I'm just saying that maybe he is not the right environment for children. And why are they advertising this banner on a TVMA show? Like, this is rated TV mature, and they're trying to sell this Undertaker banner, which will freak children out in the night. They're trying to sell it to children on a TV mature program? I don't understand. Their marketing campaign seems off to me.
Up next, we have the Commandant.
I love him.
The leader of the Truth Commission.
I want him to be a recurring character. Please tell me he's a recurring character.
He has a recurring cast.
Yes!
He says the next Raw will be from South Africa. I'm too tired. Tell everyone what the Commandant wants people to know.
Okay, well, he's from something called the Truth Commission. I have no idea what that means, but I'm really excited to find out. He talks about how criminals rule our legal system, and he's studying democracy or something, and apparently this Raw is just full of political commentary about America. And then he starts going into, like, survival of the fittest and domination of the weak by the strong, and only when you have law and order can you have real democracy and true freedom. And I'm missing out a lot of this speech because it was really, really long, and I did not write a lot of it down. But I think that I might be in love with the Truth Commission, and this man is horrendous, and what even is he talking about? Like, we don't know. But then he starts going on about how he's representing, like, one man, or he's going to bring one man who can indeed speak the truth, and that man is in my fatherland, South Africa, and he's going to interview this man who is respected in South Africa, and then he says that this man is not going to carry the red, white, and blue banner of your sussy liberal America. But then the big reveal is that man is Bret the Hitman Hart, who's apparently in South Africa again, which is weird because I remember when JR brought Bret Hart in, he was in South Africa. So apparently Bret Hart hangs out in South Africa a lot or something.
No, he's there for the tour because half the crew are in South Africa right now.
Why was he in South Africa before?
Because half of the crew go for the tour and then the other half come over for the next week.
No, but I mean, like, remember when we started Retro Raw and Bret Hart came back?
Mm-hmm.
And JR was like, I had to go to South Africa.
Because that was his only WWF date that he had left to do.
Oh, okay.
So that was why he was there. You know.
I was just kind of confused. But so then Bret Hart, like, speaks from South Africa, apparently, like, backstage in South Africa. And it's in mm-hmm. black and white, and it keeps switching angles. So there are all these Dutch angles where he's all, like, sideways, and it's all very harsh and crazy and edgy. I'm assuming they were going for edgy. And Shawn Michaels sits watching backstage on this teeny tiny monitor, looking like he would rather be anywhere else but watching Bret Hart speak on a teeny tiny monitor. And then, so I don't know, Bret Hart was talking about what's right and wrong, and I don't really remember anything that Bret Hart said. But he also said, the excellence of execution will show no mercy. Psycho Sid, you're brain dead. And then we see Bret carrying a South African flag to a ring, and I'm curious as to when this interview is supposed to be happening. Like, is this supposed to be live? Because time zones do not work that way. Like, wouldn't it be the middle of the night? I was confused, but I loved all of it.
Of course you did. Well, yeah, Bret Hart in South Africa telling us that American wrestling fans can't handle the truth and carrying a South African flag to the ring to reinforce that he's there for the international fans is great. Why would we not love that?
I mean, it's basically just Bret Hart loves all countries but America, right? Is the point of this really long, glorious mm-hmm. segment? Because this was a really long segment. At least it felt really long.
Speaking of long segments, that takes us into Vince McMahon interviewing the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. Now, here is the issue with this. Objectively, if I take away how I feel about 1997 Shawn Michaels, and it's very difficult for me to take away how I feel about him, very, very difficult. This is a great promo.
It was really excellent in a vacuum on this episode without any knowledge of anything.
But the issue is a couple of the issues. So, he talks about, Bret, when it was Bret's turn to you know, do the favors, that he, you know, or play second fiddle, that I think that was what he called it. You know, like when Bret was on top, Shawn was happy to play second fiddle. But when it was Bret's turn, he kicked and scratched every inch of the way.
Something about like when Bret Hart was the Intercontinental Champion, and then he was World Champion, and
I know what it was a Survivor Series '92. No, Bret Hart won his first WWF title in October of '92, and a month later, Shawn won his first IC title.
Right.
The idea was that Bret was the guy, and Shawn was the second
because
he had this title,
right,
which is fine. And then he said, you know, Bret took time off because he thought that the WWF and Shawn Michaels would collapse while he was gone, but instead they had the best business they'd had in six years. And he asked Vince if this was true, and Vince agreed. So he goes,
you're the boss, is that right or wrong? And Vince blushes and was basically like, oh shucks, you're right, Shawn, of course you're right, I love you.
Here's the truth of what happened. Shawn, like, so Michaels was great in the ring without quit, you know, he had the match at Mind Games with Mankind, the Bulldog match, King of the Ring, the Iron Man match, if that's your thing, it's not mine, the Diesel match at good friends, better enemies. But the TV ratings dipped and Nitro began to win in June of 1996. Whose watch was that on? Shawn Michaels. He was the champion, not Brett. The company had the lowest ratings they've ever had on his watch. They became the number two company in America on his watch, not on Brett's. If he was as good or as a draw as he says he was, why did he drop the title twice? Also, if he was so great and business was so good, why did Vince want Brett back so badly that he offered him a 20-year contract to get him back in time?
Mm-hmm.
Like, none of it really makes sense or adds up. So Shawn's in this shoot promo, which is bullshit, basically.
Well, it also doesn't make any sense when Shawn said something about, like, Brett wasn't willing to return the favor, and I wasn't sure if he was, like, talking about, you know, doing business. I wasn't sure if he was shooting. Like, I was real tired. It was 3:30 a.m., and I didn't really know what was going on, but I was like, it's quite rich for Shawn Michaels to be talking about doing business, right? Like, especially considering what comes, but, I mean, considering that he just vacated the title because he didn't want to lose to Psycho Sid again.
Yeah, exactly. So the promo was great, it was just inaccurate, and trying to make out like Brett is this... Everything he was saying about Brett was kind of untrue. I mean, there were a couple of elements that were right. Like, Brett did try and jump ship to WCW, but they offered him more money. He was going to go.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess, like, if you don't know any of the backstage stuff, if you don't know any of that, then I think this was good. Like, he's saying that Bret Hart's always been a bad guy, and he exposes his family for financial gain. Like, he would sell his mother to make a buck, and, you know, talks about how Bret's always going for money, and... I thought an interesting part of the promo was when he says Brett's obsessed with the WWF title because he's the hitman 24/7. He doesn't know how to turn it off. And Shawn says, you know, when he goes home to San Antonio, he's just Shawn and he's just a guy and he's just cool and whatever. Like, he can just be a guy. But Bret Hart was born into this, and Bret Hart was born into wrestling, and he needs to be Bret the Hitman Hart all the time. And I thought that was a really interesting point. It's just that Shawn Michaels is such a cunt. That it's really difficult to take him seriously. And, like, I think this promo was excellent in a vacuum if everything he says is true. Or even if everything he says is true in storyline. Like, it doesn't have to be true. It's wrestling, right? Like, wrestling's wrestling. Not everything you say is going to be true. But it didn't really seem to fit, I guess. And also, he went on about his long hair and his belly button ring again. Again. Because that's the reason people don't like him.
And then at the end...
He does a sexy dance.
He says he's going to do a striptease. He threatens to whip Vince McMahon with a belt, and Vince looks very excited.
Mm-hmm.
Then Owen and Bulldog come out to try and beat him up, and Michaels holds them off with a chair. And...
Yeah, Owen and Bulldog kind of, like, stop his striptease. Shawn has a padded chair, so they just sort of back away, and then Shawn does, like, a handstand thing on the chair, and I needed to go to bed at this point.
Because he's injured.
Yeah, he is so injured, his knee is so injured, Kenny, that he does his pose where he bends down at the knee.
And he does a handstand on a chair.
I mean, you could do a handstand on a chair with an injured knee, to be fair. He wasn't exerting his
but
knee
should
there.
Should you be showing that off?
Probably not.
When you're injured?
No. And he said at some point in here, didn't he say, like, something about when am I going to come back? I don't know, I'm not telling. Okay, Shawn Michaels. Like... Shouldn't Shawn Michaels, the guy who, you know, loves this and has been a wrestling fan, shouldn't he want to get back? Like, shouldn't that be his goal? It seems like he's just kind of here. Like, why is he here giving this promo when he says that he doesn't know when he's going to come back? But even if he does know, he's not telling because fuck you, basically.
That leads us into a Headbangers win a squash match.
Barry Horowitz. I've heard the name Barry Horowitz so many times as this, like, quintessential jobber, and now I know what he looks like.
There you go. Win-win. So we go into Ken Shamrock having a no-holds-barred exhibition with Vernon White.
What even was this? Also, Vince McMahon on commentary, and I don't remember the context. I think he was talking about UFC, and he was like, you know, with their submissions and their jiu-jitsu...
He did call it jiu-jitsu.
He said jiu-jitsu, very specifically.
I love Vince McMahon so much. So the idea behind this was, because Sandra had said, I need to know what the idea is behind this.
I'm so confused by what's happening.
So WWF had an agreement with the UFC where UFC would give WWE some clips from Shamrock so they could kind of show, you know, his career. And in return, WWF would plug the UFC pay-per-view on April 30th, which is what Vince was doing on here with Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, because he was plugging a UFC event, which was very strange to hear.
So that was the agreement, you know, a short-term agreement where WWF could show some footage from UFC, and then in return they would promote the pay-per-view. And Vern White was one of Ken Shamrock's trainees from the Lion's Den, where he would train people to fight, I guess. And they decided to do this little exhibition. But the problem is that in wrestling matches, fans see punches. So when they were trying to do real punches, nobody was reacting because they were just punches. But then the problem was Shamrock, even with his glove on, ended up busting Vernon White open very badly. And the camera cuts away from it so to try and not show you it, but there's two massive splodges of blood in the ring. So they have to like go to the finish thing like very, very quickly and not do a bunch of planned stuff they had. And Shamrock beats him in like 2 minutes, but it was seen as a big failure because it made Shamrock look a bit shit.
I didn't know what it was meant to accomplish. Like, because
the idea behind it was let's show what Ken Shamrock can do to people so you can get an idea of what he could do to wrestlers in a ring.
Because, like, Vernon White, bless him, gave the flattest promo I've ever heard during the Headbangers versus Barry Horowitz and Freddie Joe Floyd. He did not look to be any sort of match to Ken Shamrock. Ken Shamrock comes out, like, chiseled like a god, basically. Like, Ken Shamrock looks like a formidable human being. Vernon White did not look like a formidable human being.
No.
Vernon White just looked like nobody.
Agreed.
And then it was kind of confusing because I've watched, like, I haven't watched enough UFC to know the names of holds or how scoring works or anything like that. But the fact that they're calling it a no-holds-barred match confused me as well because I'm used to in wrestling, no-holds-barred means, like, all the crazy shit, right? Like, a no-holds-barred street fight, you can everything but the kitchen sink and the kitchen sink if you're the Legion of Doom and Nation of Domination and Ahmed Johnson, right? Like, no holds barred means anything goes. This just literally means no wrestling holds are barred. But what holds are barred in a professional wrestling match? Like, what actual holds? And also, no holds barred apparently still includes rope breaks. Because they broke the ropes.
What was intriguing, though, about it was that they do this thing where Shamrock beats Vernon White and then Vader comes out and starts like shoving the referee between him and Shamrock to basically say that he wants to fight Shamrock. And then Vader has a 2 minute match with this guy, Ken Stiletto.
I thought it was great. Frank Stiletto.
Isn't it Ken? I thought it was Ken.
I have Frank written down.
Okay, let's just say Frank Stiletto then. And I guess this was
it could very well have been Ken 1 minute and Frank the next minute, and I wouldn't have noticed. Because at first I had written down Vader versus someone with handsome on his butt. And then I heard them say Frank Stiletto and wrote down Frank Stiletto.
However, what was interesting about it was Vader did in 2 minutes what Shamrock was trying to do.
Yeah.
Which, like, Vader just pounded the piss out of this guy, and I believed it.
Why didn't they have Ken Shamrock, like, just pound the piss out of someone?
I don't know. That would have been smart.
Because, I mean, I like UFC. I like, you know, exchanging holds and jiu-jitsu, not jiu-jitsu. Like, I like matches that have jiu-jitsu in them where, you know, you're rolling and you have to counter moves and stuff. Like, I find that really interesting, but that doesn't, to me, signal killer. That, to me, signals good technician.
Yeah. That's what I came out of it was going, well, why is the guy who's from UFC looking like he just threw fake wrestling punches when he didn't? Because they were real and they bust the guy open. But then Vader did wrestling moves to someone and looked like he beat the piss out of him.
Yeah. I was confused at this point because, to my knowledge, Paul Bearer was not still with Mankind, which turns out to be false. No, he was with Vader at this point. So I was confused as to why Paul Bearer was still with Vader when he wasn't with Mankind anymore. But then at the end of the show, he is with Mankind. So I guess when the Undertaker rejected him, he just went back to Mankind and Vader and they took him back?
Yes.
Okay. Like, did Paul Bearer ever abandon Vader specifically? Does Vader even care?
Vader doesn't care.
Okay.
Vader just lets Paul Bearer follow him if he wants.
Okay.
Are you interested in seeing a Ken Shamrock Vader match?
I kind of am, actually.
Good, because you're going to get one.
Okay.
Gorilla Monsoon's backstage. He's talking about how Sid is not at the arena yet. He's supposed to face Mankind in the main event. So the only person he's got left on the card of, you know, who's a suitable opponent is Steve Austin. What I loved about this is that this is what a president would be doing at this point in the show. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Is he would be saying, you know, that he's not got many people left and that the only person he does have left is Steve Austin. So Steve Austin comes out, he...
I mean, are you saying that Bart Gunn is not a suitable opponent for Mankind?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, you'd be accurate.
Austin ends up getting in Monsoon's face and talking about how, you know, he's already fought his match tonight, he's getting no interest in having another one. And Monsoon's like, you know, you have to do it. And Steve Austin's like, no, I'm not doing it. And then Austin basically says that, like, if Monsoon gives him Sid's spot against Brett at the next In Your House, then he'll do it. And Gorilla Monsoon says, okay, if Sid's not, then let's do it. And I thought it was an interesting segment, and I enjoyed the kind of on-the-fly way that Monsoon had to handle the situation.
I like the logic of it, because Steve Austin... Sorry, another cough drop. Because Steve Austin is still obsessed with Bret Hart. And he sees, like, Steve Austin is very cunning. So he's like, all right, I don't want to wrestle again tonight. And it's not fair to make me wrestle again tonight, which is another thing that leads me to believe that he is not really a babyface. He's like, he's just Steve Austin. I don't buy that he's an actual babyface. I think he's just Steve Austin. But, like, he doesn't want to wrestle again tonight, but he's like, I'll do it on one condition. I want to face Bret Hart again because I'm still obsessed with him and I want to kick his ass because I didn't quit in that last match and that still sticks in his craw, right? He didn't quit. So in his mind, he shouldn't have lost that match because Ken Shamrock was the one who quit on him, or like his body quit on him, right? So I like the idea that, you know, only if he gets to face Bret Hart on April 20. And also, it's like, if I'm placing Sid here, I want to replace Sid there too because Sid lost his chance because we don't know where Sid is. We never find out. I was expecting him to come in at the end of the show or something and show up and be like, ah, I'm Psycho Sid. But no, like, he's just nowhere, I guess. I don't really understand. I did like him also having a brace and saying that he wants to put the brace around Gorilla's fat head. That made me laugh for some reason.
That takes us into Jim Ross interviewing Mankind, who kind of goes into a weird kind of shoot promo thing where he, you know, ridicules wrestling for making him work for 300 days a year to protect his daughter back home, and that, you know, talk about what he's going to do In Your House, and then the lights flicker in the arena, and Undertaker does a voiceover that he's going to get his revenge at Taker's Revenge, which is the name of the In Your House.
Yeah, or, Revenge, you know, of the Taker?
Yep, Revenge of the Taker.
Wow.
Which is, you know, clever that it was named that before a fireball.
Right.
Which then takes us into the main event, which is Steve Austin versus Mankind. Not a very good match, to be honest. At all.
No, but it's, not really.
It is what it is. And then in the end, big load of interference. Owen Hart and Bulldog, LOD, Vader, everybody. Everybody's brawling. And then in the end, Vader ends up hitting Mankind by mistake. And then Vader and Mankind start brawling. And then Paul Bearer makes them make up. And that's the end of the show.
Well, he tries to separate them and he tries to make them make up, but the episode just sort of cuts off.
Vince, no, well, they hug. They Did hug. They make up.
Maybe my network just cut out.
Yeah, no, they kind of, you know, reluctantly hugged and made up.
Well, my network cut out, apparently, like 30 seconds from the end or something, because Vince was mid-sentence and Paul Bearer was like, no, no, don't, da, 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 and then it was just done. So I didn't know if it was another, like, Shotgun Saturday Night, hey, we're off the air now, it just ended, but it must have just been my network, I don't know. But I don't know, the match wasn't terrible or anything. I kind of like the fact that they were just beating the shit out of her. That was kind of fun. And, you know, chaos. Legion of Doom casually sauntering to the... I was just waiting for Sid to arrive. I thought he was going to show up and be like, hey, what the fuck is going on? But he never did, and I was sad about it. Also, in the Mankind promo before... Yeah, but something that was weird about it was, like, the Undertaker, I don't know, he was talking about how the Undertaker never really knew him, blah, 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 but then he says something about how he doesn't have fancy cars and posh hotel rooms, which are just not things I equate with the Undertaker.
That's true. I can't imagine Undertaker getting his Hilton Honors card out.
I mean, I'm imagining it now, and it's going something like that press conference with Linda McMahon, just in a Hilton.
It was a great press conference.
It was a great press conference. But, yeah, I don't know, chaos to end the show. It was fine.
What about this episode overall, then? You know, the lead-up to In Your House, we've got one more Raw left before Revenge of the Taker. Where was your thumb for this one?
Kind of middling to up, because it was still kind of... I think I'm just baffled by so many things that I was intrigued. And the whole... I don't know. I was laughing at so many things, and I love the Commandant so much.
This is such a thumbs up for me. Like, you've got LOD getting slopped and then beating up the Godwins, Doc Hendricks trying to sell a door banner with underage children.
Owen and Bulldog backstage the whole time cracked me up.
Yes. Steve Austin beating Billy Gunn up, Honky Tonk Man trying to get another protege, the Commandant, Shawn Michaels doing a great promo, the Shamrock Vader experiments. And then the thing with Monsoon and Steve Austin. So yeah, I'm thumbs up.
I'll thumbs up too, because even the Shawn Michaels promo was very good. And I don't know if he seemed less drugged or if I was more drugged, but like,
I think it was a bit of both. To be fair. Sid had a back injury. That's why he missed this taping and why he is pulled from Revenge of the Taker.
So. I did want to find out where he was, because they just keep going, we haven't heard from Sid. We don't know. Maybe he has a flight problem. Maybe he's stuck in traffic.
Maybe he's at the softball.
No idea.
But yes, he will be back. So
good.
We will see him soon.
I'm not ready to say goodbye.
Tell me a lie. That's pretty much it, folks. It's very late. We need to go to bed. Not together, but we need to go to bed.
Right. I'm in Michigan. You're in Florida.
Yeah. So, yeah, Sandra, Twitter, where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the_ropes. Find us on Patreon for bonus content. Classic ITR episodes are going up again. Retro pay-per-view reviews. We're going to have another retro pay-per-view coming up soon, because they never end. April 20th, there's going to be another one. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Lots of bonus content there. I'm too tired to go through all of it right now, but there's a lot of cool stuff, so check it out. And there you
also, I'm going to put up as a bonus, coming up later on this week, I'm going to put up the entire 1 hour and 45 minute audio of ITR Live with Sting in Glasgow. Full episode. So enjoy that coming up later on this week. So.
Yeah, it's a good show. I listened to it.
Okay. Thank you for listening, everybody. I hope you get a few better soon, Sandra.
I'm trying. I'm going to just sleep all day tomorrow, I think.
You should. I think that's pretty much the way to go.
Yeah.
We will be back soon. SmackDown Summary might be a little bit late because I am traveling home. So by the time I get back and we get on schedules, we're hoping to have it up on Wednesday night. If not, it'll be Thursday at the latest. And we'll be back with regular Retro Raw on Friday from South Africa. So yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for all your support. Glad you enjoyed this podcast. And we will speak to you soon.
Bye.
No, I'm sexy. I've got the looks. The drive should go wild. I've got the move. That really move 'em. I said chill. Up and down their spine. I'm just a sexy boy. I'm not your boy toy. I'm just a sexy boy. I'm not your boy toy. hot. I make them shiver, their knees get weak. Whenever I'm around, they see me walk, they hear me talk. I make them feel like they're on cloud nine. I'm just a sensitive.